What's so incredible about K-pop is a mix of different genres. It's like you take a piece of urban, right, or hip-hop, and you take a piece of EDM, and you can take a piece of this and that and mesh it up and then put it and turn it upside down. And then on top of that, you have these beautiful kids, you know, with makeup and style and doing this beautiful choreography. It's a package.
Welcome to Get Down with K-Town. I'm your host, Esther Choi. Hey, 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 guys. We are here recording in Atlanta. It is a beautiful Sunday afternoon, and I'm really thrilled to be here because I've heard so many great things about the growing Korean scene in Atlanta and how it's really popping off. I've been wanting to check it out for a while now and finally have an excuse to be here and talk to some amazing locals who will really break it down for me. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Heather Kim, who is a local Atlanta native, not born here, but was raised here. Welcome to the show, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for being here. Heather is the founder of Yuriko Music Group, or YMG Entertainment, the very first Korean-American female-owned record label in Atlanta. And YMG claims to be the first K-pop label out of Metro Atlanta.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, Heather, originally your background was technically not even in the music industry at all. You were in tech and venture funding organizations before all of this. So how did this happen? How was YMG Entertainment born?
I've always loved music. I had a passion for music. My father was a musician. In fact, he ran like a nightclub back in the 80s, one of the first Korean scenes.
I love this story. You have to, like, elaborate
on
the story.
Yeah, so we immigrated to the States. I was born in Jeonju, South Korea. We immigrated to Atlanta. I've always loved music. My father was a musician. He played guitar. He sang, whatever he needed to do to, you know, feed the family. And so we immigrated to Atlanta in 1984. There was just no Korean scenes or no Korean restaurants, hardly any, maybe one.
But why Atlanta?
It was just by chance. My mom happened to have some family members, some distant cousins who lived here. And so, you know, we came here.
Very few Koreans then.
Yeah, very few. It wasn't because of the city or the geography. It was just, oh, we know so-and-so of some cousin. Okay, we'll
it always happens that
way,
right?
Yeah, it was kind of like, okay, we'll choose Atlanta. And that was it. And so he ran this, you know, the shabby restaurant, hole in the wall. It was part of like a, probably like a Motel 6 kind of situation in downtown Atlanta. And during the day and mornings, it was a food stop for truck drivers.
Uh-huh. And okay. So what kind of food? Like diner food?
Well, yeah, like burgers, you know, hot dogs, mm-hmm. right? And then at night, I mean, they ran, like, they worked 24 hours. And so at night, they'll shut it down after the food, you know, truck drivers went to their motel rooms. And then it would convert into this Korean nightlife.
How? He just, like, randomly was like, I'm just going to do this.
Yeah, like, he, you know, he's a very social guy. And so he knew every Korean player, all 50, in Atlanta. And he just started, you know, using his resources. You know, he was already a singer or a guitarist. And so he just started playing live music. And my mom's in the kitchen cooking
Korean food.
Korean food.
Oh, and awesome.
And was Anju stuff.
Uh-huh.
And
did you guys have soju, too?
I don't know, but I know they had a lot of liquor and
of
alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Like Crown Royal and all that, right? And so, yeah, they just did what you see in the typical, you know, Korean market today, mm-hmm. in the nightlife. And so they had live music, mm-hmm. you know, my father playing and stuff. And so,
was he playing Korean music?
He was. He was doing that, you know, the 80s.
Like Imunsei or...
yeah, like, you know, Tejana, uh-huh. or, you know, the...
These are some, like, very old school,
very, you know,
Korean K-pop. Before K-pop.
Before K-pop. You know, I think it was called something else back then, right?
Trot-tu?
Trot, yes. Imija.
Yes, yes.
You know, mm-hmm. in fact, Imija actually came...
What?
She came to Atlanta, and she had a concert, and she had my dad playing with her, because he was the it person.
Yeah, and she was, like, she was a very iconic Korean singer.
She was, like, the most, one of the most influential and iconic, you know.
In the 70s, or was it the 80s?
I think it was the 70s. She must have started really, like, maybe 70s. Mm-hmm. I don't know the facts, mm-hmm. something like that. But, yeah. But she was still very popular and had this fame in the 80s as well. And so it was a very big deal when she came
That's a huge deal to Atlanta.
To Atlanta, of all places.
Yeah. Was it because of your father?
I don't think so. But somehow they hooked up, and he was her guitarist.
That's amazing.
But he was it. There was nobody else.
And so you were growing up in this scene where your family was all into music.
Yeah, we lived in the restaurant. I was five, no more than five. My brother was probably four. My sister was just born with a baby. And so back then, you don't have things like care.com, and you bring your children to the... And so we lived in the storage unit right next to the walk-in freezer. And we would witness my parents working, all day. My mom in the kitchen, my dad out there entertaining the guests at night.
And that really influenced your love for music.
I think so, yes.
That's
for sure.
When it started to blossom.
I loved it. He'll bring home his keyboard and I would play by ear. Just whatever he was playing, I'll pick up on it and play.
But you didn't go in that direction.
No, I didn't. Because they were the, first generation immigrants and they wanted a better life for us. And so it was more, hey, get good grades, stay in school and do something better than us, right?
Yeah, always.
And so it was not the music. It was not a restaurant. You better do something else where it was worthwhile for us to bring the entire family. Go get a white collar, go get a job or be a doctor,
Always be a doctor or a lawyer.
Or just, something where it's going to get you out of this, at the time, it was a hard life. It was, their business was blossoming and everything, but we lived in East Point, Atlanta, which is, not the greatest part of Atlanta. I mean, there was gang fights outside. And so it was that culture, the subculture we were living in. And so it was a very kind of rough kind of neighborhood. And so I think they were associating that lifestyle, the nightlife and all of that with that. And so I think in their mind, this is not a sustainable living or lifestyle for our children and family.
So they ended up leaving that diner and doing something else?
Yeah, they came in with nothing, literally a few hundred bucks in their pocket. And then they built enough savings. They just didn't spend.
Yeah.
We didn't have, I don't remember having AC. And
this is like a very typical immigrant story, though.
Yeah, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment. Yeah. The reasons what triggered us to leave was my mom almost got shot. She was sleeping in her bedroom, and the gun. There was a fight upstairs, the apartment above us, and there were gunfighting.
Oh my god!
And the bullet hit. It dropped through the ceiling and literally landed in between her legs.
And that's insane.
That night, she said, "Okay, we're going to pack up our stuff and go."
So that night, that's when it happened.
And leave the neighborhood, and we're going to leave the restaurant. It was a blossoming restaurant, I think my dad said in the 80s, in 2 years, they saved 50 grand, which is a lot of money back then in the 80s. And so they took that money and bought a convenience store and moved to the rural parts of Georgia and raised us there.
And then from there, you obviously decided to go into a more professional tech-driven.
The emphasis was do well in school, go to a great college, and get a great job.
Yeah, and that's what you did.
And I listened well for being the firstborn.
Firstborn Korean-American.
Being the responsible sister, taking care of the siblings. I just did what they asked me to do, and I did.
And how long were you in that industry, in that career, before you decided to change it up?
Yeah. So I've been in corporate, life, since after college.
Yeah.
2004 is when I graduated, and since then,
it's been a long run,
yeah.
You started your label last year.
Right.
And how did this happen? Like, all of a sudden, you were like, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. Was it like that, or was it a long time coming?
Yeah, so, I turned 40, and I started doing a lot of more. I have a daughter. I started doing a lot more self-reflection and thinking about how do I want to live my life for the next 20, 30 years? I all started with that. What is it that I love? I've always loved music. And it just made sense to me with my business background and love for music. So you know what? I think I'm just going to try. What's it going to hurt?
And that was it.
And it was simple as that.
Obviously, your passion for music is there, but like, why K-pop? Why Korean?
I said, you know what? I want to do something in music business, but I didn't know how. Like, what do you do?
You know, like, am I going to become a singer?
Right. Or? Like, what do you do? Or, you know, how do you run a, what's a record label? I didn't even know the term. I didn't understand the meaning of a record label mm-hmm. until I went to go visit an attorney, an entertainment attorney. And I had to sit down with her and I said, this is what I want to do, X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. She goes, that's called a record label, Heather. Oh.
You're like, oh.
Okay. Then how do I do this? And so I was struggling with that. And then I was visiting Korea. My parents said, hey, we know somebody in the music industry. Maybe he can give you some expertise and, you know, mm-hmm. some mentorship. Great. So I flew there, met with him. He happens to own one of the largest labels in Korea. It was one of the largest boy bands of all time. And he was telling me, hey.
Who is it?
Okay, oh. So he is the CEO of formerly YMC Entertainment.
Okay.
So now I think it's called Swing Entertainment.
And who's the boy band?
The boy band is called 101.
Okay.
Have you heard of?
I mean, I'm sorry, my K-pop knowledge is bad right now.
But they own, like, Produce 101.
Okay.
And they do all the reality, making of the band kind of thing show.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I met with him, and he was telling me, hey, we're touring the U.S. Like, no way. I had no clue that K-pop was on this rise.
Mm-hmm. And this was last year?
This is just 2018.
Okay, 2018. Okay, 2 years ago.
Yeah. And then it got me thinking. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me about the Atlanta market. He was telling me about K-pop. It was just mind-blowing, kind of eye-opening education for me. And so with that ride, I was thinking, is there demand in the U.S.? Came back home, did a lot of research, started making phone calls, and then one thing led to another. And I pitched this idea to this amazing producer. He's Grammy Award-winning producer. Mm-hmm. And he says, yes, Heather, you're onto something. Let's do this. And so it just started with that. It was just a simple conversation, great idea, let's do it.
And passion.
That's right.
And it was based out of here in Atlanta. And I feel like that's a really important point, right? Because obviously there are many like in New York or LA, but like Atlanta, you're a native here. So what about this growing crazy Asian population in Atlanta? That's probably what kind of drove you to this, right?
Honestly, I wasn't even thinking about the Asian population.
Oh, you weren't? You were just like, I just want to do this.
Well, I learned that K-pop, sure, it has that baseline of the Asian, but what was more surprising to me was it really was becoming more accepted by the non-Americans, mm-hmm. non-Asians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go to like K-Con, it's pretty wild.
It's
not a lot of people are Korean.
Yeah, that's so true. And then when I started doing my market research stuff, so my market research was go to a K-pop concert.
Yeah.
I mean, and I went and I looked all around me. I didn't see a single Korean.
Which K-pop concert did you go to?
I actually went to, the first one I ever went to was, they're fairly popular. Mm-hmm. They've been around for a long time. And I went and I looked all around me. I was more fascinated. I had my camera. I was more fascinated with the fans more than the actual performance. I was like, oh, that's good, you know? But uh-huh. then I'm like, look at this fan base.
Yeah.
It was just a diverse group of people, and they loved it. Mm-hmm. They were singing along this Korean song, mm-hmm. saying all the Korean words better than I could ever sing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible.
And then, and that was in Atlanta, or was
that? That was here at Georgia State.
Are there a lot of K-pop concerts in Georgia right now?
There are.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I started tracking was just in 2018 or 2019 alone, I was tracking average four mm-hmm. bands come through Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Every year.
I mean, per month. Per month. So that's, you know.
And are they like performing when they come to Atlanta, or what are they doing here?
They're concerts.
Concerts.
Just like if you go to a Sam Smith concert, you know.
And they're like all getting sold out and...
Yeah, I mean, don't quote me on the numbers. Probably have to do some more research. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that was just my own kind of personal data research, just mm-hmm. just tracking it and looking at Facebook events and things like that. So, on average, I'd say four concerts or, bands coming mm-hmm. through Atlanta per month.
That's incredible.
And sold out, you know, like 2,000, 3,000 seats sold out. I think one, you know, Blackpink came through, of course. Mm-hmm. That was a big one, you know, 10,000 seats. Monsta X, and the more recent bigger ones came through, but even 2019, you know, Eric Nam, he's from Atlanta, by the way.
Is he from Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah, he had a big, you know, like a 3,000-seater show a couple weeks ago.
Are there a lot of K-pop stars that are born out of Atlanta besides Eric?
I think another one is the rapper, Sunny.
But that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to sign people from the Atlanta area, right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Essentially, why go to Korea? Do it here.
Yeah.
Grow it here. There's a demand here. Do it organically here.
And how has it been for you?
We started, like, the whole audition process in early 2019. We've signed since then 4 artists, mm-hmm. or trainees is what they're called. And so they've been training these 4 artists.
For a year.
We signed them in May, so a little bit less than a year, and they start training in June. Yeah, so it's been
And six, what's that process months. Like? So they're trainees, and obviously I'm like a total noob in this
sure.
world because I don't know how that works. So you sign, they audition, and they send it through digitally, or do they come in audition?
Yeah, so it's a process. You submit your online, you know, audition.
Mm-hmm.
If you get selected, you get invited for an in-person interview mm-hmm. and audition.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you get selected.
How is your process of finding these talents? Do you just have a feeling, or what do you look for?
Definitely have to have some baseline skill set, you mm-hmm. know, vocals, dance, or have some affinity for it. But more importantly, I'd say, too, is we're looking for character, personality, integrity, work ethic, having discipline. Training to be a recording artist is it's very similar to like training to be an athlete or a basketball player.
It's very intense.
It's very intense. Every day is a full-time job. You come in, they come in every morning, they do their scales, they do the warm-ups, they run a mile and sing at the same time mm-hmm. every morning. And then they go into their kind of routine performance show stuff. If they're not doing that, they're in the recording studio, you know, making an album, making songs and, mm-hmm. and learning production as well. So they're constantly working. And
who is training these trainees?
So we have a band manager, and she really kind of just stays on top of them, making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and making sure we have deliverables. And then we also have a talent developer. He's on our team, and he's incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got huge credentials. He's America's Got Talent guy. He was on So You Think You Can Dance. So he's an incredible dancer, singer, musician, pianist, and producer. He does it all, and he does it professionally, even to this day. So he's really taking all those skills that he has and really just pouring it back into the trainees, which is incredible. I'm super grateful for. His name is KP, or we call him KP, but Kenneth Pario. He's been incredible, just keeping them disciplined, going through. I mean, it's a mundane thing, too, at the same time, because it's just like, come in, you got to do your work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
you
like,
got to train.
Just like anything else you do in life.
Exactly. I mean, they're putting in their work right now. And then what happens? When do you know when they're ready to go out?
One of the things that we do differently, too, is we already have them out uh-huh. in the market. So they're all on our social.
Uh-huh. Meaning what? Like they're going on auditions or?
Oh, so when we say out, we're talking about they're going out there and doing performances.
Okay.
We'll get booked gigs mm-hmm. and things like that. So they're already out.
Okay.
But our followers know them to be as trainees.
Yeah.
They're out as trainees, mm-hmm. not necessarily as debut artists yet. So how do we know? They just have to be ready, mm-hmm. like mentally, stamina-wise, professionally. You know, there's so many different things that we look at when we know, okay, this person is ready to go out and get an album done and then perform 50, 100 shows.
Yeah.
Right?
So. One curious thing is I was looking at the artists that you signed, and not all of them are Korean.
That's right.
Right? But they're technically K-pop stars. I'm curious about that. Like, what does that mean? You're sticking to Asian Americans, but not necessarily Koreans, but they're doing K-pop. Can you talk a little bit about that?
three of our artists or trainees are Korean-American, mm-hmm. And then two of them were actually born in New York.
Oh, really?
Right? Mm-hmm. So they're Korean-American. They have that background. And then Trinity, she's half Vietnamese and half Caucasian. But when we say K-pop, we're starting off as a K-pop group, doing K-pop cover songs. In addition to that, we're recording music that is kind of in tangent or to K-pop genre.
Okay.
So in that sense, it's K-pop with Korean lyrics and things like that.
I was curious because what personifies K-pop anyway to you or to the public?
That's a great question. It's the whole package. K-pop is, you know, the way I see it is more than a genre itself. It's a brand. It's the whole, the way they do music videos, makeup, performances, dancing and singing at the same time. It's the whole package is what, in my mind, is what makes up K-pop.
And also the type of music, obviously.
The music is beautiful. And even my producers would say the same thing. What's so incredible about K-pop is it's a mix of different genres.
Right. It's not just one singular thing.
It's like you take a piece of urban, right, or hip-hop, and you take a piece of EDM, and you can take a piece of this and that and mesh it up and then put it, and turn it upside down. And then on top of that, you have these beautiful kids, you know, with makeup and style and doing this beautiful choreography. So it's like, it's pretty intense when you, if you think about it. It's not just, oh, be a best singer or just be a best, you got to put it all as a package.
That's why you say it's a brand, really.
I would say it's more of a brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the reasons why it's reaching so many different demographic in different countries and is breaking those barriers, because it's not just a music play, right? Mm-hmm. It's a brand like Nike or Puma, you know? It's a brand.
I was actually talking to a K-pop music producer, and he said the more unexpected turns that you have in the music, when he's, like, writing the music, the more popular and the more people love it. So it's a lot of these, like, different things, right? I just think that's why K-pop is so unique.
If you kind of think about the way, so here's my music ears kind of talking now. If you listen to other genres, like urban, we'll just pick on urban for now. It's, like, one of the most popular, mm-hmm. rap is so popular. It's kind of like this two-dimensional road. Right, you can anticipate what's gonna come, and there's this pattern recognition. In K-pop, you don't know what's gonna turn. I mean, every 8 beats, it's like, rap, and then that's another turn, and now jazz, and now this, and now that. You know, it's like, what's a saxophone there? You know, and on top of that, what's so incredible about it is the choreography, the visual effect, is what makes K-pop K-pop. It's not just that here, what you hear is beautiful, what you hear, but then visually, your eyes are, like, moved with the music.
Right, right. That's why the music videos are so elaborate, and they're, like, really insane to watch.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. And the choreography.
That's right, the dance.
It's the choreography. I've seen some of the, you know, kind of simpler music videos. I mean, you can just watch it. The older BTS music videos. It was so clean and simple, like one-dimensional scene kind of thing. But the choreography goes, it twists and turns with the music. And so you can't help but stay glued to the screen and wondering what's going to happen next.
Do you think that this all came from your love of Korean culture and your heritage in the end? Because you're passionate
absolutely.
About...
Absolutely, yeah. I was introduced to K-pop, the original OGs of OGs. When I was a little kid, I must have been
nine or ten. Was it like Seotaeji?
It was Seotaeji Idol. I mean, it was them, and I watched it on videotape, you know, back in VCR days.
Yeah,
and I loved them so much. It was like rewind and play,
right?
Like 100 times, you know. And I mean, that was kind of like my first love for K-pop.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
It was special. It was special.
But here's what I would say, too. I never thought in a million years that I would ever see that, the K-pop of what I knew back then, be accepted and but winning in the market
it's incredible.
In the world.
Right.
I never thought I would see in my lifetime a modern version of Seotaeji Idol, Idols on YouTube was, you know, a billion views. Or the modern version of strategy is BTS, right? I was working out the other day. I'm sitting here going through the channels on my elliptical machine, and I see BTS on Today Show with 100,000 people lined up in Times Square wanting to see just a glimpse of them.
It's really about the fans.
I just never thought that even Korean, honestly, even Korean culture, even Korean food, because of parts of where I grew up, would ever be accepted and be winning in the market. Not only be accepted, but just winning too, mm-hmm. which is incredible.
And you wanted to be a part of it. That's where your passion really lies.
It just made sense. You know, it, like, puzzles, you know, make sense. It just, I don't know. I just
it's like,
know.
What do you want to do for the rest of your
next
life?
Next 20, 30 years.
You want to stick to your people.
What I know and mm-hmm. the culture and what I'm, this is my root, my heritage, and I don't want to forget that.
I love it. What is the future of your label and your new business?
I don't know.
Like, what do you want?
I don't know what the future holds. I just have a lot of deliriously optimistic about the future. Which way this turns, I have no idea. Just like K-pop, any songs.
Just like K-pop.
I'm stepping one foot in front of the other, but I'm very optimistic of what this could become. And music is such a... And I was having this conversation with publicists earlier today. Music has become such a commodity play, right?
What do you mean by that?
It's easy to get. Easy access.
Yeah.
Free. You know?
It's everywhere. It's online.
Everywhere. You know, millions of streams here and there, Spotify, everywhere. I know what I don't want. We're not just going to be another, like, music play or a K-pop band trying to make it. You know, I kind of see more as a... Okay, the first stepping stone for us is K-pop. Now what? You know, where could this turn into a more of a brand play where we really make it as this, wow, you know, they start as K-pop, they're from Atlanta, how cool is that? And then something else could happen, you know, some more adventures. In some ways, it's kind of like hacking culture in a way. What's so incredible about Atlanta, too, is this is where culture happens in Atlanta. A lot of culture happens in Atlanta. Music culture happens in Atlanta. Imagine, like, I was like, why not? I was talking to my team the other day. Mm-hmm. Why not bring, you know, what we're already doing well in K-pop, but then bring other, you know, how about country? How about, you know, blues? How about R&B? How about, like, things that we're now exploring and being able to experiment? Mm-hmm. And then put all the visual stuff there, too, like the whole K-pop stuff as well.
So doing something different.
Yeah, but it's different. But I think everyone seeks to try to be different, but it's more than that. I think it's an adventure, and it's this journey that we're taking and having just this optimism about the future for YMG. So
I can't wait to see what's in the future for you guys. Where can we find your talent? Like, where can we find your K-pop group?
Yeah, so we have an Instagram page. It's at official.ymg_ent. Mm-hmm. So that's where we do all our posts. We have a Facebook site as well and our website.
Does your band have a name?
Yes and no. We started playing with this band name, NRG.
Okay.
And it stands
for... Oh my gosh, NRG used to be the 90s K-pop group.
That's exactly right. So
I know. I remember.
You remember, right?
Yes.
So it's Next Rising Generation.
Okay.
Is what we came up with until, and we had no idea, until we started getting a lot of the comments and feedback saying, you know, the NRG is a 90s K-pop band. And of course, we're like, oh, sorry. And so now
I was a fan of them. So.
Yeah. So the fans are coming to us about that. And that was, you know, good to know. And so now we're looking at exploring other band names out of respect for the 90s K-pop band. Yeah.
You should check them out, though. I used to love their music.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm all about the 90s K-pop.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's my generation.
H.O.T.
H.O.T., exactly. Oh, my gosh. Well, Heather, thank you so much for being here. I can't wait to see what's in your future for YMG Entertainment. But I do have something special for you. I cooked one of your favorite dishes, and this is what I do for all of my guests. And
saving the best for last.
Of course. It's always the last segment. And honestly, to do this, it's a lot of work because, you know, I'm like, I just flew in this morning, you know.
I was going to say, how in the world did you cook and travel and land in the busiest airport in the world?
Exactly. And Marcy, my producer, she literally landed, got her car, and she was like, Esther, I'm going to go food shopping for you because, like, timing wasn't right for her to, like, come pick
That's
me up.
And crazy. We go.
Yeah, so she was, like, FaceTiming with me, and I had to, like, show her what to buy, which was hilarious. Hilarious. And obviously, one of the dishes that you picked was one, like, it's just not a common Korean dish, which right. now you know what I cooked for you.
Right.
Because I'm not going to make kimchi here because I don't have time to ferment. Galbigui, it's too typical, and I've already made it for another guest. So we have agujim left.
Amazing.
Yes.
My favorite dish. Smells so good.
Oh, my gosh. I hope you like it. So it's agujim, your favorite.
Ooh, wow.
So do you want to explain your fondest memory of agujim and why this is your favorite dish?
Probably goes back 5 years when I was first introduced to agujim in Korea, in Busan.
Oh, the best place.
The city of agujim.
Uh-huh.
I went to this little tiny family-owned restaurant. I heard it was the best fish place, and I do love stewed fish. And I had the best agujim there, and I will never forget that.
Oh, man, that's big shoes to fill.
So I've been looking everywhere for that comparable, and this smells incredible.
Please try it.
I can already tell you, I'm in bliss mode right now. I'm so happy.
I love when people just, like, love food so much, right? Like,
I love it.
All of the guests.
I can swim in this.
Okay, now you gotta eat it.
Okay.
And tell me the truth, obviously, because I had to make this on the fly.
I was gonna say, this is a pretty hard dish to pull off.
Yeah, and obviously I had to reheat it.
And you're traveling, so how did you even accomplish such a big feat?
I will tell you after you take a few bites.
Okay, so I gotta take a bite. Okay.
Take a few bites.
All right, I gotta try the. Like, I love kumdamer, so I gotta yeah. want that. Wow. It's so good. The sauce is incredibly rich and spicy. And, oh, man. This actually is taking me back to Busan, Esther.
Oh, my gosh. That's
so
a big
good.
Compliment.
So good.
I can't compare to those the Busan people who have been making this for years and years.
Hey, you're incredibly talented chef. This is.
So there are a little bit of bones, but, you know, it's monkfish. So agujim is a monkfish stew that's been braised in this, like, really spicy sauce. And it has lots of bean sprouts, which I think is the best part of agujim, right?
I love the crunchiness of the bean sprout and how the fish, you know what I love about agu, this jim is, it's not fishy. It, like the meat, it's like it melts.
Yeah. And it's not, it doesn't have a fishy flavor at all. It's actually a very clean tasting
very
fish.
Very clean fish. And it just melts in your mouth like, how do you describe it? Almost like, kind of like jello, but with texture. I love it. Can I eat more?
Please. We want to hear the sounds. And what you're hearing, guys, that's the bean sprouts. And the crunchiness of the bean sprouts really complement the texture of the fish, like the softness and... Yeah, I know what you mean by it's like kind of chewy but very soft at the same time, the fish, the texture of the fish.
Chewy yet melts.
Yeah, and I love that it's like cut into these like little tiny pieces. And I love that the bone is still like in there because that's kind of like the fun of it. You kind of like eat it with your hands and, you know, you eat around the bones. And it's just such a rustic, you know, homey dish. And I love that it's incredibly spicy. And it's funny because I saw you wrote agujim on it, on the thing, and I was like, okay, so I have to travel to Atlanta and that day somehow shop for monkfish and all of these other ingredients and, like, cook this, like, smelly stew somewhere. But, so a block away from our hotel, our executive producer's friends live in this, like, really cute house, and they were so generous to lend me their kitchen for the next few days to cook for all of my guests. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be walking a block over from our hotel, using these very generous people's kitchen and, like, stinking up their home with, like, massive Korean food. But in turn, I leave half of it for them to enjoy as well. So they're having this for dinner right now.
Nice.
So I would say that's a good exchange, right?
Yeah, totally fair. I would love for you to come into my kitchen anytime to stink up my house.
Right. And make your agujim.
Yes. It's heavenly.
How was it?
Delicious. I want to eat more.
So this is your first time trying my food.
It's delicious. I have to come visit your restaurants.
Now, yes, you do.
Now that I know about, yeah.
Agujim, thank you for having that on the list, because it was really fun to make it, and I literally had to make it in like 3 minutes, and I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah,
I had to pick, like, the hardest dish, right?
Thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, you're
welcome.
This
was such a pleasure. And what an honor. What an honor to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. It was an honor to cook for you, and I'm so happy you love the food.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. Get Down with K-Town is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by our executive producer, Christopher Hasiotis, and me, Esther Choi. Follow me on all social media at Choi Bites. And I'd also like to thank our producer, editor, and mixer, Marcy DePina. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.